Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons and Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Welcome back to the Save or Die Podcast, adventure number 12. I am your host, VM Vince, along with my co-host, DM Liz, who's back, ready for action.
I'm back!
Smiling as ever.
Yay! And there was much rejoicing.
Yay! And the unenthusiastic crowd in the background, DM Mike, as usual.
This is where the crickets thing comes in.
And as usual, our sidekick, DM Glenn.
DM, don't confuse me with logic, Glenn.
Yes. We have a wonderful, fun pack show for you guys this week with the four of us. What are we going to call ourselves? The Fab Four?
Sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm.
The Gang of Four.
The Gang of Four. Nice.
Get one more and we could beat a five families.
Yeah,
Fab Four.
Let's knock Glenn down the stairs and go to the cauldron room, all right, guys?
You know, when you throw them down the stairs, it kind of makes it nice and clean.
For once. Liz, you haven't been cleaning the steps lately, though.
Yeah, now I gotta do laundry.
So what have you guys been doing that's classic lately? Anybody?
Well, don't everyone talk at once.
I know, I didn't pick anybody, so I figured. Let's start with Glenn, since he talks.
And talk. Nothing as usual. I've been busy rehearsing, but in between, it took me a whole month, but I finally got through the Thieves of Fortress Badabascar, which is a Judges Guild, really good module. Gives you like a five little fortress to go through and clean out. And unlike Tegel Manor, it makes a modicum of sense. But it's one of their better ones. I wouldn't hesitate running anybody through it. But once again, it's like the first two levels, first to third, then about the third level, kaboom, get those guys out of there, call the higher levels in. It gets real deadly real fast.
So they're expecting you to level up pretty regularly as you're going
down. Oh, yeah. One advice, when you hit the third level, don't go left.
Okay, let me write that down.
Yeah, okay, let's write that down.
In the right or the hallways, go that way. Don't go left into the caverns. You go into a big cavern, there are five, count them, five red dragons in there of varying ages.
This is cool.
Five of them all together, huh?
Yeah.
Like some kind of clan or something?
It's something like that, the clan dragon or whatever. I mean, you got the old guy up there in the skull-shaped cave and the couple of younger ones over here. It's like, sorry, wrong way. Yeah.
It's a story. A dragon lady.
Who met a very hot... Never mind.
That's very my story. Hot dragon. Boo.
Yes, exactly. So what have you been doing, Mike? Lately.
Well, I don't know if this falls under what I've been doing lately or new product. I suppose both, but I've been looking through a couple of free downloads that Thorkammer has on his World of Thorkammer Lulu page. It's called XS1 Lulm and XS1A, The Ward of Werskalot. They're both written for basic and expert games.
Cool.
First being between 2 to 5, levels 2 to 5, second, third to seventh. And, hey, it's free. You can't beat free, and Thorky tends to write pretty good modules to begin with.
No, he does, definitely.
This is for BX?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, the Lulne and Werskalot are both set in Mystara, or the known world as it was originally introduced in the Expert Rules box set.
Mystara.
But it's vague enough. You could plop it pretty much anywhere in any campaign, I think.
Cool.
So I've been looking through those and basking in the Thorky writing goodness.
Speaking about the X modules and everything, I meant to say that we had got a listener request from D20 Radio Forums from Full On Gamer. He wanted us to review X1 and X3 because he has a bunch of player handout information that he gave. He made up for his games, especially X3, to help make his game run more smoothly. So maybe we should push that up on the reviews.
Okay.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, because I want to see what he has. He said he'll mail it in to us as soon as we're ready to run it on the show. So let's push
That'd
it up.
Cool.
Push it up.
I've read X1 and ran it quite a few times, but I don't think I've run X3. So be interesting.
Which series are we talking about here?
The X modules.
You got any
Isle
titles?
Of Dread.
Ah, okay.
Which later came with a box set, I believe.
Yeah, with the Expert box.
Mm-hmm.
And X2 is Castle Amber, but I don't remember what X3 is.
I can't think of it off the top of my head. I just saw it, too. It's that cool one. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the cool one. Unlike the other X modules, this is the cool one.
Speaking about cool, Liz, what were you doing?
Nothing.
That's cool.
Absolutely nothing. I've been pretty bad, but
okay.
I've been out of state and been trying to catch up on schoolwork after coming back, and so
bitchin'.
Gaming stuff has kind of fallen by the wayside this last week or so.
It happens.
Yeah, real life happens. I guess that leaves me. I was busy at a convention just this weekend, so.
Yes, tell us about that. What kind of convention was that, and what did you do, and all that?
MEPICON. It's Mid-Eastern Pennsylvania Convention. It's been going on for over 10 years now. They have it twice a year. Once in March and once November.
November, I was going to guess.
Yeah, November. I was like, what's the next date? I don't know. And it was pretty cool. I only went on Saturday. I didn't go for Friday and Sunday because I was old, so, you know.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Says the youngest person in the podcast.
Yes, that's right.
The oldest one's about to say, so.
Yes. It was fun. I played in a first edition game for about 4 or 5 hours. Then we took a break and there was an auction, which I grabbed a whole bunch of stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got maybe about 10 or 15 issues of the old RPG newsletter.
Was all right.
The Polyhedral magazine.
Polyhedron.
Ah, Polyhedron.
Yeah.
Cool.
I got a whole bunch of those for like $1.
Wow.
Very cool.
I got a couple things from Rollades. The Demons 2 box set. Perfect condition. Everything was in there great. The box had maybe a little dent in it. I got that for $1. And
definitely a good deal.
Wow.
I got another Rollade product that was something like Portal something and something or other it was called.
Oh, I can't think of it. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
For $1 also. And what else? I got a bunch of Hackmaster stuff. Probably about 4 or 5 Hackmaster books for like $3. And that GM screen that they had.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the GM screen of death.
That had 400 flips on it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can like unflip it like a transformer and make it into like different things out of it. It's like, whoa.
And it's got a pizza topping generator table.
I know. I was like, whoa.
That's the best part of the
screen,
you go
online,
I think.
When you go online for Domino's, you got something to go by. So
yeah, okay. Exactly. But it was all these things were in great condition. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
So you made out like a bandit then.
Yeah.
And I scored X 4, I believe it is. Or is it, yeah, X4.
X4.
The mm-hmm. module X4. I can't think of the name offhand, but it was X4.
Cool.
I pretty much got that for free. It was thrown in with one of the sets, so.
All in all, you had a good time.
Yes. Sounds- and then they rounded the night off by playing a couple hours of Toon, Glenn's favorite game.
Yay.
which we played a game was called the Cthulhu Comes to Springfield. We got to play various characters from The Simpsons. Uh-huh. And the GM had his own mechanic added to the game called Sanity.
Oh, of course.
And pretty much you had to roll versus the Sanity, and you only had 3 points. If you went past the third point, your character was pretty much handed to the GM because you were done. You went so insane, you ran away.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because one of the Toon supplements,
mm-hmm.
They did a parody of Call of Cthulhu in there, and they gave you the stat Insanity. If you lost it all, you were sane, and you just couldn't deal with this anymore, and you left. There's nothing yeah. sense.
Really? What was that an official thing or unofficial?
Yeah. No, oh, yeah. It was like the second Toon supplement. I can't remember the name of it.
Hmm. Okay.
But it was one where they did all these parodies of different games, and one of them was Cthulhu, and so they added the stat Sanity or Insanity.
Nice.
Anyway, but it sounds like you had a good time.
That's yeah, good. It was fun. Definitely fun.
Oh, and one more thing that happened. This isn't basic, but at Half Price Books, I managed to score all 3 core first edition AD&D books for like $32. Which to me was a deal. It didn't have the classic cover on it. It had the reissue cover where they changed the cover. But inside it's the same thing. And they were pristine.
Nice.
The only thing that was really, you know, inside they had the guy who owns it name. And it looks like he did it his offhand with a crayon or something. Brian
Johnson. Hey, he could be listening right now.
Yeah. He could
be. That's why I didn't see it.
Oh, okay.
And he'll sue you.
Yes.
Oh, don't want that to happen. Gee.
Oh, no.
He might fill it out in crayon.
another nice little thing that you figured you'd like, especially Mike, because he always says this, but the first edition game I played in, the parents brought their young children into play on the game to teach them D&D.
All right.
Cool.
It was their first time playing, and the parents wanted them to start with first edition, as they said, the real edition. So.
All right.
Even if it's not one of the classics, it's still...
It's still the kids are starting on the right track.
Right,
until
exactly.
Until I started being a host here, I thought first edition was the real edition. You know, this is still uncharted territory for me, so I can understand, you know, the confusion.
Well, sure, it's called first edition. Most yes. people are going to think, well, it's the first.
Yeah.
Yes, and just for those people, newer people out there listening, it's not D&D first edition. It's Advanced Dungeons & Dragons first edition.
First edition.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of people like me who just, when they start gaming, they jump to first edition because that's what people were playing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's all
and,
new.
And I, as much as I love Brown Book D&D and the supplements, that's not something you want to start kids on. It's could be better organized and better.
I don't know. I probably if I had kids, I'd probably start them on like Beckme.
Oh yeah, that yeah, oh, yeah or exactly. Holmes or the Moldvay,
or even
book.
Yeah,
yes.
BX. But to me, Beckme is like. What did you say, Vince? You only needed like the first 2 sets
for Beckme?
On Etzer.
Yeah, you only really need the red and the blue, or yeah, red okay. and the black, I should say.
Because I'd add the companion the third set only because I'm used to going up to like 20th level on everything because of first edition. So
really,
I've never made it.
I've never made it, but that's level. What I'm used to. That's what I like. You're
oh,
right.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think I've only had, like, 2 characters get to 20th level in 30 years of gaming.
Yeah.
nice.
The highest level I ever got was in the RPGA a few years ago. I got to 8th level.
Woo!
And, oh boy, and then they changed the whole thing in campaigns, and it's like, okay, I guess I'm just going to get to 8th level.
Hmm.
Felt pretty good, though, you know, for ADD.
Oh, speaking of expert, X3 is Curse of Xanathon.
Yes, that's it.
And X4 is Master of the Desert Nomads.
Yes.
So.
Okay.
Actually, guys, we actually do have a voicemail that we need to go over on the show here.
Ooh, okay. Our first voicemail.
And, yeah, this is the first voicemail. Area code 570-290-7283 or save. And you can call in and leave your voice for us to play on the air. But this one comes in from Crispy.
Let her rip.
Yes, it's Crispy. I just wanted to call in about some of my thoughts on Section 10. Sorry, Adventure 10. Just wanted to talk about vampires and undead and zombie kobolds, to be exact. I know Liz was talking about having a zombie kobold. That actually got me thinking of something I've done for my Pathfinder games, which I mean a kobold werewolf, which will reliably kill a first-level fighter in a fight more than half the time by itself. And I just thought it's a cool way, and I actually would like to hear if you guys have ever done anything with templates or made any templates on your own. I think, personally, they're a great idea. You can use them to speed up your game just by overlaying, you know, a quick little, like, +2 damage and immunity to silver over any monster. And I know Glenn and everyone, you guys were all talking about vampires with personalities. That actually leads me to another thing I did. I made a vampire troll, which is a truly terrifying monster. Immunity to fire, damage reduction. He's got regeneration from his troll state, and the only way to reliably kill him is with fire, and then keeping him away from his coffin. So he loses hit points. It goes down from about 63 to about 36, which is almost half his total hit points. But he gains all these really nasty benefits. He becomes a lot more cunning, a lot more visceral. He's got nasty things like energy drain and blood drain and everything like that, negative levels he knows. And all his attacks are natural attacks, so he gets to add those things on automatically. His name was Nigel. It was voiced by Tim Curry. Or my best Tim Curry impression that I could muster. So just him calling it. See if you guys have ever done anything like that in your own games, not just classic D&D, but anything else you've ever done. And look forward to being on the show again. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
All right.
Feel like you were just on the show.
He sounds vaguely familiar. I don't know why.
But anyone want to field some of his questions?
Well, let's see. Zombie trolls, I got that part.
Mm.
That does sound truly terrifying.
It does.
Vampire trolls. Yeah.
Or vampire trolls, I'm sorry. Well, either way, suck your blood, eat your brains, you know.
Have I ever used templates like that? I don't think so, really.
I'm not really a template user.
Yeah, I don't think the idea of templates really came into effect until, like, what, second edition, really?
Late second, more like third, I think.
Yeah.
Late second or third, somewhere around there.
But I could see where he's coming from. Maybe throw templates on certain monsters to change them up a little bit. Yeah, I don't see why not.
I did kind of like the idea of the kobold werewolf. Although I must admit, I had a brief picture of a kobold turning into like a little labradoodle.
Because kobolds are cute, right?
They are cute. They are so cute. Especially if they bite your kneecaps off.
Yeah. Nice.
They're crunchy, too, when you step on them.
So, yeah, I guess we can do that. You know, it shouldn't be too hard to do that for anybody who's a good DM, so.
Yeah.
I can see where templates could be useful, especially to new DMs and such. But, yeah, generally, I've generally, dare I say it, eyeballed it. And just, you know, okay, vampires have this, this, and this, I'll jack that up and go, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you want to do templates, and that certainly would speed it up.
Templates are not a bad idea for starting DMs.
Yeah.
Or if I can also see it useful in a convention situation. you know, running a con game or something. I mean, a game at a con.
Con game, Glenn? Okay.
You're
some people say all my games are con games.
Anyway.
But, yeah, I can see like having like 3 or 4 templates of monsters you're going to use at the convention and then on the fly, you know, like between games or something like that. Okay, change that around. Boom. Okay, I'm ready.
Especially if, say, you're dealing with a vampire that, through the course of the adventure, is going to take several victims, but you don't know exactly which victims it's going to be. You just have a set. Okay, whoever he bites will come back with these abilities on top of everything else. Go.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. Send us in your questions. You know the number, 570-290-SAVE. Or you can actually go to a new feature that we have. DM Glenn has opened up the video answering service for us.
Yes.
Glenn, tell him how to get to that and what it's about.
Well, Jason from RFI Podcast hooked me up on this. He's on there too. And it's called VU. VYOU. Google it. I don't know what the URL is. Probably put it in the show notes. But basically, you will see me there waiting patiently, reading something or whatever. And you can type in a question. And then later on, you'll get an email if there's an answer, and I will video an answer to you. And basically, it's like everybody's the shell answer man for whatever their speciality is. And mine is basic D&D. Jason does first edition. And even Crispy's on there now. He's gonna be fielding questions from Las Vegas. So give it a try. VYOU, VU. Just another way of SOD presence on the internet.
Yes, you can actually go to V, as in Victor, YOU.com/GMH, and that will give you to DM Glenn.
Thank you, Vince.
You're welcome.
Now, on to the show.
And I could see some people have asked some really weird questions of you, Glenn, already.
Yes, like, can I have 15 quid?
Why would they ask you that question?
I don't know, but the rate of exchange will kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like you're looking at what is that? City-State Invincible Overlord?
Yeah, originally I was reading through first edition. I'm going, ooh, I'm basic. I should change this.
Yeah. It's really fun to watch you sitting there really bored.
Yeah.
Waiting for something.
It reminds me back in the late 80s, early 90s, down in Austin, there's a, you know, your community access channel. There was a popular program that came on from like 10 to 12 every night.
Uh-huh.
And it was basically this guy had set up a camcorder in front of his chair, and he just sat there looking at the camera.
Oh my God, I think I saw that guy. Did he used to talk about, Mike, did he used to talk about rocks in his backyard?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen that guy.
Community access. We got 2 hours to fill. Just put this guy on.
Holy cow! You saw it in Texas,
saw it personally, but I heard about it from the Access Channel in Austin. But yeah, I mean, he was really popular, especially at parties. People would, you know, put him on TV and drink, and
he'd just sit there and talk about stuff.
Yeah, or just eat chips, or you know, just look at you.
I need a show like that. Yeah,
Glenn. You have a show like that. It's on VU.
Oh. But longer.
Oh, okay.
And now let's head into DM Fiat.
Nope. Sorry.
What?
Nope, you're wrong. Look it up.
I don't have to look it up. It's common knowledge.
Nope. No, no, no.
DM Fiat this week is Sea Adventures. Mike, you picked Sea Adventures this week. I've never seen a Sea Adventure topic, so tell us a little background about Sea Adventures.
Well, it's something that's pretty much been talked about in every version of D&D, is that it's not used as much as one might think, I think anyway, but I'm kind of a nautical kind of guy, is the, you know, as a good variance on the wilderness campaign, having sea voyages or island hopping or that sort of thing. and how different it is from the standard walk through the woods, find the dungeon, go back to town, rinse, repeat.
Huh. I don't know. Sea Adventure. I kind of every time I think Sea Adventure for D&D, I think Pirates of the Dark Water.
Oh yeah?
No. No.
I don't know if
I
you
think
guys...
of Popeye.
Popeye, really?
Sorry. It's my other wife is a film buff.
How unexpected.
Mm.
I was half anticipating that he would say Gilligan's Island.
Mm.
Oh no, I got that shot of my sister.
That would be Isle of Dread, sorry.
Gilligan's Island of Dread. I love
it. Skipper.
The next Tackmaster module.
And the rest. So, are there rules for Sea Adventures?
Yes. For Brown Book D&D, it's predominantly in the Blackmoor supplement. But you're given various wandering encounter tables, how dealing with underwater adventures. You know, yeah, you can get a helm of water breathing and such, and you can breathe, but, you know, the water environment's going to be entirely different as far as combat or spell casting or anything. Your movement's halved. Spells do all sorts of really weird things in the water. Some baselines are given to it in Blackmoor, but you know, a lot of it is called on to the as far as the DM. In mm-hmm. fact,
yes.
Tell us, Mike.
Well, I would think players would have to make, like, random rolls on the ship every once in a while when they're first on the ship to see if they, like, puke or if they can... No, honestly, because if you're on the boat for the first time...
What, Constitution?
Yeah, we were in a game where the Dungeon Master had us all rolling to make con saves, see whether or not we'd be throwing up.
Well, that only
and
makes
I
sense.
And I blew every single one of them.
That's why fighters wear helms.
It only makes sense to do that the first time you're on a boat, so.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you can be the saltiest sea dog in the world, and, you know, first few days on a ship, you could be puking your guts out. It's just all a matter of, you know, your balance and your reaction to it.
Now, you said in your notes here, because I was looking them over before the show, Blackmoor has it, and expert books define this.
Yes.
The Mentzer expert books?
Both Cook and Mentzer. Yeah, I believe so. I have not actually looked at the Mentzer expert set, but I know the Cook one does.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the Mentzer expert right now, and I'm trying to find the section you were talking about.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about Blackmoor. There's an interesting thing in the Monsters and Treasures of the original Brown books where they give... sea monster. Just sea monster. And the definition is this can be, you know, this is left up to the DM. It's huge. They start the size of purple worms, get even bigger. You know, they do 3 or 4 dice damage. They might have treasure, but most parties are probably not going to want to hang around when this thing shows up, etc., etc.
Would you?
No, not particularly. I mean, since, you know, some of this described as the Midgard serpent or something. It's like, yeah, time. This is, you know, the poster child for when to run away.
But yeah. The Kraken just wants to give you a hug.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I'm a barbarian. Every monster is a sea monster. A sea monster, I kill him.
I actually thought the expert... for Mentzer is actually more wilderness than sea.
Really?
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, the Cook one is mostly wilderness, but it's got underwater adventures as well, I thought.
I'm looking...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Glenn. I'm looking through it right now.
I was about to say, I concentrate on Brown Book.
I never got much mileage out of, like, sea adventures other than, like, if they're on an island or on the boat or something like that. But as far as, like, underwater, I never had much use for it. I didn't want to deal with Sagan or sea elves or anything like that or trying to breathe underwater and all that. It just seemed to be more trouble than it's worth.
Oh,
But that's my opinion, and
I disagree. If you're trying to make things rough on your characters, player characters, it's great. Try to cast that fireball underwater. Go ahead. Lightning bolt. Toss that lightning bolt underwater.
Yeah.
Okay. They ought to come up with like a water ball spell just for that purpose. I'm just spitballing off the top of my head right now.
You know, that's a great idea, Glenn. A water ball spell.
Yeah.
That might be a good little task for you.
I would like to see something like Chain Lightning do what happens underwater. Everybody gets it.
Well, you have to remember when you're doing sea adventures, you're on a ship, you have to remember that characters the first time they're on a ship, unless they have some type of background they wrote up that they were a sailor or something, that they're probably going to be, they're not going to have their sea legs. So you're going to probably want to roll at least a couple times for the players to, you know, get their constitution going with the sea. Maybe if they're a fighter, you can probably give them a little bit of more advantage because they have better constitution than, say, like the magic user. And you have to also remember that fighting on a ship is not as easy as fighting on land.
No, unless it's like crystal clear, calm water, you're going to be fighting that boat along with whatever else you're fighting.
Oh, yeah. And
all it takes is one shattered lamp or dropped torch and your boat's on fire.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of wooden boats use a lot of tar to try to seal cracks and such, and that stuff
goes quick. Yeah.
Now, also on the good side of things, too, you can use a lot of things on the boat to help combat, such as ropes and various banisters you can jump off of. You can use.
There's always plenty of belaying pins.
Yeah. Mm. Swing from things to tackle people is, you know.
Rope ladders up to the sails and, yeah.
Yeah, and you've always got kind of the swashbuckly type theme if you're wanting to go with that for adventures.
Any DM worth their salt has seen the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind playing in sea adventures, but I've never run one, and I don't think that I would do it very often. I just don't feel like I know enough about ships or boats to be able to do it well. You know, if none of your players know much about ships and how they work, then I could probably get away with it. But all it takes is one player who knows even a little bit about sailing.
Uh-huh.
Mike.
Are you looking at me?
I am looking at you. Speaking of, like, we were in an adventure where we were on a ship and the person who was running it didn't know a lot about ships. I didn't know a lot about ships either. So I was, you know, I was able to suspend disbelief pretty well. Mike was grinding his teeth through the entire thing. And then I get a 20-minute monologue after we've left and gone back home. It's like, and this was wrong, and this was wrong, and it's like,
it was a freaking wooden dungeon. I mean, this sailing ship had like 5 levels, and
wow, that's a big ship. Was it the Titanic of its day?
And there's like a galley door to drop into the hold, and then over it is another layer of. Of cabins? What? No. You teleported into the hold? I mean,
I know just enough about sailing to get myself in trouble, but how many levels are on that ship?
5.
It was 5? Like a hotel.
It was a floating hotel, but then when we got onto it, it hit a rock, so it's sinking.
Was the Titanic, pretty much.
I think the biggest cargo ship during that era only had, what, 3 decks?
Yeah, if you're counting the quarter deck and the forecastle, yeah.
Yeah, then there's like
maybe the center was lower because that's where you open the doors to put the cargo in. But
yeah,
anyway.
You know, if they get down to the bottom of the ship on that, there better be a hell of a lot of ballast.
Yeah. And if they've hit a rock, it means generally, you know, we were near an island, so it's probably meant we hit a reef, and the ship is going to sink, but a good half of it's not going to sink. It's going to be sticking up because it hit a rock.
I guess I guess you were adventuring on the Titanic or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't helping that I was blowing every single roll that I was trying to do. My halfling is wall-to-wall vomiting for 6 turns. And I'm like, there's nothing left here. I should be dry heaving.
You just got a new main attack.
Okay, whatever.
All right, so Mike's disgruntled adventure. That's fine.
Yeah, sorry. Back to point. There is a lot of things to keep in mind, but
yeah, and I know crap about sea stuff, so yeah. I would never run one because it would probably turn out to be crap.
Now,
but
Mike,
I'll play them happily.
Oh, okay. Mike, your sailing experience, is this with just regular sailboats or?
Oh no, this is theoretical. I'm not literally go out and sail ships.
May have been in the Navy or something. I don't know.
No.
Naval warfare is one of his big things.
My PhD work is transfer from sailing ships to steam.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And ironclads. So, yeah.
Okay. See, my sailing experience is going out fishing in the ocean with my dad.
Okay.
That's about it. So, you're... Okay, I just want to clear that up.
I was on a Carnival cruise ship once.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
Well, yeah, my sailing experience has to do with going down to Florida and Boca Raton going on a boat, so...
That works.
That's about it. So...
But yeah, I a lot of the pulp stories, you know, the Howard and Lieber and stuff, has a lot of ocean going and underwater cities full of... You know, great jewels and gosh knows what else. And I just think it's a fun alternative.
Could be.
If on land wilderness travel is getting dull.
Uh huh.
Well, that's how they came up with that whole spelljammer thing, pretty much.
Yeah.
In space.
Yeah.
Space.
Why they ever thought of a ship to do that, I have no idea.
I liked Spelljammer.
I did too, but still.
But to me, it was its own game. I mean, if you tried to put it in your D&D game, it's going to blow everything. The whole power level of your game is out the water. I mean, you can play a beholder.
Uh-huh.
Enough said.
Whoa. I think it could work if you had a very high-level campaign going. If everybody's characters were already in the, say, 15th to 20th level range, you could probably drop in a Spelljammer ship and stuff like that without it making a really huge difference in how things were working.
Yeah, great way to get from game world to game world.
Yeah. Or you could have them, if you have lower level characters, you could have them on a ship and have them, quote-unquote, lost in space.
Yeah.
They can't get back to their original world and thus blow, you know, the power.
I used that for a group I did where they started out in the Forgotten Realms, and so I wanted to use my own campaign world I came up with. So basically they got into this wizard's tower, and he said, I'll get you there. Basically the whole tower was a Spelljammer ship that he had planted there centuries ago or something like that, and it just pulled up out of the ground and they took off, and they look back and they see all these monsters and dungeon stuff scampering out of the hole that he left in the attacking people and things like that. It's like bye.
Nice.
Boy, are you going to be in trouble when you go back home.
Who said he was going back? Oh no. He's done this twice before on other worlds. He don't go back to the same place.
Okay, cool.
Anyway.
So, what more can we say about these good old sea adventures?
Old sea adventures?
Well, as far as various monsters go, in Blackmoor, they give a whole lot of, and I'm not really sure why, they've got, like, the Caposynth, which is like which is basically a gargoyle, but underwater.
Underwater gargoyle.
A Colanth, which is an underwater hobgoblin.
Okay.
Lacedans, which are underwater ghouls. And I'm like, well, why bother? I mean, it's a ghoul, it's undead, it doesn't breathe, so why do you need a separate underwater type of ghoul? Take a ghoul and dunk him in the water. It's not going to bother him.
Hey. He has feelings too, you know. Brains.
And most ghouls could use a bath, so.
They can't help that they haven't matured fast enough. And.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, that's one thing about Blackmore that I thought was a bit going overboard, is no pun intended. There's plenty of underwater monsters you can use. Why are you doing this? I mean, you can, yeah, you've got the Lokatha, the Tritons, Merman, Sahugan. Sorry.
And if you want to really get hardcore, there's always the deep ones.
Yeah, well, our Kuatoa and AD&D, but yeah, the Lokoth could work for them as well, though they tend to be neutral.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, there's plenty of underwater stuff that you can use to mess up your players' days. So if they're having too much of a cakewalk on land, try putting them in a boat.
Not to mention the rather garden variety things like sharks and jellyfish and giant squids, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we'll talk about that next segment, so.
Okay.
Because we have a whole random encounters coming up next. Actually, in fact, let's go into that right now so we can talk about that.
Okay.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up must leave. Presto!
You will come up no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random encounters.
So we're going to talk about continuing our sea theme going on here.
Yar,
yes. You have sea serpents.
I'm coming, baby!
We have sea creatures.
Oh. Yep. Well, like in that last, in the DM Fiat section, you know, the sea monsters entry in the Brown Book is basically, you know, make this huge thing, give them a lot of attacks, and watch your players scatter.
Tentacles optional.
Yeah.
Now, you see, the first two books from Menzer don't have sea monster.
Yeah, I think that's the only time when I've just seen the generic sea monster.
Yeah, because I was just looking for that before the show.
So, it kind of reminds me of like the, what they came up with one in one of the monster manuals, the Behemoth, which was basically, if you want Godzilla, use this thing.
Mm.
You know, or any kind of giant animal. So it's like saying, okay, this is a giant animal in the water.
Yeah, Blackmore was chock full of basically any normal sea creature that you needed as a giant. It was in Blackmore. They had giant crocodiles, you know, giant toads, giant frogs, giant beavers.
Now that's wrong.
Glenn.
Giant beavers. And you can hire them to make dams and stuff.
Tinker's Dam. Yeah. Hire them to... You hire them? Okay.
Anyway.
Any woodchucks, quit chucking my wood.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I mean, just normal monsters. And of course, you can be as high level as you want to be, but you can still drown fairly quickly.
Oh, yeah. And if you want to add a little realism to that, I understand that, what was it, back in the days of sail, that very few sailors knew how to swim.
Oh, yeah. Very few. Of course, most sailors tended to be people that got kidnapped and drug onto a ship and told how to
Most of the old sea dogs didn't know how, because they figured, you know, if they're out in the middle of the ocean and their ship sinks, they're pretty much dead.
Well, and there was no incentive. Again, this captured crew, the captain doesn't want to teach them how to swim, because the next time they get into port, you know, they're going to have this horde of people leaping over the side and swimming for the shore.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, generally swimming was not taught. I mean, most people could probably dog paddle if given a chance, but yeah, ooh, you're in that fine +3 plate mail? Glub.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute, +3?
+5, +1, doesn't matter. Okay. It's lighter than regular plate mail, but it's still bulky and heavy.
Yeah.
Sorry, for some reason I thought +3 magical plate mail, which would make a difference. So.
Yeah, it'd make it lighter, but that's about it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. +3, it's lighter than regular chain mail, but it's still heavy and it's still going to be bulky.
Yeah.
I thought the the Dumer had something to do with not drowning, so.
Unless you have magical plate mail swimming, I mean.
Yeah, plate mail of the deep or something.
Oh, okay.
But normal magical plate mail, yes, it's lighter than regular plate, but it's still heavy, you know. I mean, okay. It's not something you want to go, you know, deep sea diving in.
Speaking Unless you want to do deep sea diving, never mind.
Yeah.
So I suppose one could argue that is...
animals look like they're wearing full plate, you know.
Yeah. Right. So I suppose you could make the argument that that is DM fiat, you know, if you want it to just be the, you know, the weight of a light tunic or something, you can.
Okay.
But even still, it would be bulky.
Yeah, it would be bulky. I mean, you know, you'd be slogging down the bottom there.
Yeah.
Right. Back to monsters now.
Anyway.
Yeah.
The most famous sea serpent we've heard of time, the Loch Ness Monster. Has that ever been present in any D&D books? I've never seen a Loch Ness Monster, actually.
No, I think...
No, I think the Plesiosaurus, which is also in Blackmoor, I believe, is the closest thing you can get to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, nobody's ever specifically done the Loch Ness Monster that I know of.
I don't think I've ever seen hardly any name monsters in any of the monster manuals. They're always like, here's the equivalent of.
Yeah, or some type of large sea serpent or something like Mike has listed.
Isle of Dread, I think, is pretty packed with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. For that matter, I've never seen Bigfoot in there either, so.
There's the Yeti.
Yeah.
There is the Yeti. Ooh, a seagoing Bigfoot. That's scary. anyway, I digress.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
But yeah, there's plenty of regular monsters. There's the Morkoth, who build their kind of hypnotic-looking maze at the bottom, and they have a very nasty ability of basically reflecting any a spell hit on them. Mm-hmm. They can then shoot it back at the spellcaster.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty awful.
Let's hear from Liz.
There's not much to hear from Liz, because Holmes Basic does not have anything about sea adventures in it. And the only monster that they have in there that is even briefly mentioned as being aquatic at all are the lizard men. That's it.
Well,
Holmes assumes you are going to be smart and stay on land.
Well, this is a bit of a stretch, but the sample adventure in the back has an octopus, doesn't it? Remember on the beach with Lamunda the Lovely and the boat with the pirates?
Yeah, but, you know, then looking at their little monster section, they don't give stats for octopi in there.
But they have it in the back of the sample adventure. That's weird.
Do they give a full write-up in the sample adventure or just a stat line?
It's probably just a stat line more than likely.
Probably.
Yeah, there's really not a big write-up for anything in the sample adventure. I mean, even when you come across Lamunda the Lovely, all you get is one stat line, strength, intelligence, wisdom, blah, 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 and she's second level, you know. And that's all you get for her. but, yeah, there's... I'm looking at it right now. There is a large octopus at the bottom of the sea cave, 3-hit dice, armor class 7, which will attack boats. If the octopus makes a hit with a tentacle, it will not do any damage immediately, but will pull the victim overboard and try to drown him. CH for more information about drowning. Encounter area H.
Yeah, with the river, I think.
Yeah. The octopus gets 6 attacks per melee round.
Yeah, that sounds pretty much like the giant octopus right up in Blackmoor. Especially with the, you know, the tentacle attack. But yeah, I mean, there's not really much detail. Which is ironic, considering Holmes puts you in Port Town.
Although he is very kind, he says, assume that all characters know how to swim. It's like, all right, Dr. Holmes, well, thank you.
Okay.
This thanks you.
Yeah.
I've just been trying to comb through all the editions here. I can't even find anything in the rules cyclopedia about sea adventures or anything like that.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. But but like I said, I'm trying to do a quick flip through here of all this stuff, and nope, haven't found anything. I went through Beckme, and I went through Metzer and the rules cyclopedia. I couldn't find anything.
I'll say that's weird, considering how much it's actually in the rules cyclopedia slash box sets.
Well, that would be something good for me to research for next time. I think I will.
Yeah. Might be a good idea.
Yeah.
So let's wrap up Sea Creatures, and that's really most all we can say about it, and we'll head into Products of Your Imagination, the last segment of the show.
Yes, sir.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier, and we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons and Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
Products of your imagination tonight. Okay, Glenn, what do we have this week for our module to talk about?
Well, we've got a module that was sent to us for review from Small Niche Games, written by Peter C. Spann, called The Inn of Lost Heroes. And this was written for Labyrinth Lord, and it's for levels of 3rd through 5th level, about 15 to 20 levels total. And Mike, what's this all about?
Well, without giving up too many spoilers, it is a location-based adventure dealing with the Inn of Heroes, a well-known tavern. You know, it's the quintessential adventurer's tavern. It's a place to go, to party, to put up notices. You know, it's very well known for all this. Specifically trying to cater to the adventuring group. However, the party, once they get there, has more to worry about than just getting cheated on a beer or getting in the middle of a bar fight. There's an adventure based involving a curse and the deaths of many, many adventurers and tavern keepers and civilians and such. I don't want to give away too much, but it's very Halloween haunted housey. It's got some scenes in there that just kind of make you go, ooh. And I don't mean kind of fun housey like Tegel Manor. It's more just kind of, okay, that's kind of, yeah.
Sounds like the adventurer version of a Roach Motel. Adventurers go in, but they don't come out.
Yeah.
Very, very apt, actually. Very apt indeed. And
some new magical items are in this module, apparently.
What's that?
There are some new magical items for you to peruse around through.
Yes.
Some new
in
monsters.
In particular, there is a particular talisman that you can get to try to resolve the plot device or the storyline and possibly free yourself from the fate of horrible deathness. There's a couple of new monsters. One I really liked. The other is kind of, it's okay. It didn't really grab me, though.
Well, go ahead.
No. Anyway, reading through the module, I had several good points. Again, like Peter's last module, the Blood Moon Rising, he does very well with coming up with NPCs and NPC adventuring parties. Particularly some, you know, other parties that can be used to act as a foil to the PCs, which I think he He did well at Blood Moon, and I think he did well here as well. Not to mention, there are certain events that occur where the party to succeed has to have a fighter, a magic user, a cleric, a thief. But if they don't, there are NPCs that, if played right, the party can recruit to try to cover that hole in their ranks, which I think is a nice bit too.
Especially if one of their number has been killed or something else happened to incapacitate them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So this is kind of like a supernatural type adventure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Supernatural theme, I should say.
Nightmares, ghosts.
It's a good Halloween running adventure, pretty much.
Actually, it's a good Halloween running adventure if, like, you know, Tendril Manor, if you're going to make it a whole night and stuff, and just like, like that. This is a lot creepier, a lot more humorless, and it's smaller. So if you only want to do it, like, for the night for a few hours, you only got a few hours on Halloween to do it, this is a good one to do.
Yeah. It's very role-play intensive, too.
Yes, it is. I have some reservations on it, but to me, it's another one of those special occasion modules. The way he's written it, first of all, let me see, he's done some really good stuff here. I love he's got a really good grasp of a scene and just the feel of some place. I mean, you know, I went to some of these places, I'm going, whoa, I can feel the heat in here and all that kind of stuff without giving anything away. But at the same time, it has a lot of potential for railroading. In fact, right at the beginning, he gives an author's note. It says, know your group. It begins by trapping the character, blah, 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 and doing this and doing that. And if I say anything else, I'm going to give stuff away. But basically, he's saying, look out. You might railroad him. Don't. And anytime a module says that, I just kind of, you know, give it the crooked eye and go, don't know if I want to do this or not.
Yeah, he does give the option of the players deciding to stay or leave.
Yeah.
But if they leave, well, then it's over. Yeah, there's no adventure, you know,
Say you're not running this on Halloween, and if you're running kind of a sandbox, that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go in there, if they get out by the hair, the skin of their teeth, and something happens, then okay, fine. That's where we'll use that for later. You know, later.
If you spent the whole night planning for that adventure, it's a bit
And there's a lot of things here that depend on the characters doing something specific.
Well, not to bring in first edition here, mm-hmm. but this module reminded me a lot of I-6 Ravenloft.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah. In the same way of you're stuck in A, so to get out you have to do B.
Uh-huh.
And to
exactly.
do B, you have to go around and get different things in order to complete the circuit, quote unquote, and defeat the main baddie.
Right.
Who's a bit of a sympathetic character too, but will still kill you if you
But
very
like
horribly,
said, the,
if you don't
on the plus
watch
side,
yourself.
He has a, on the plus side, he has a real good sense of scene and character. I absolutely love that crazy cleric in here. That is such a good character.
The Harker, yeah.
Yeah, he is just, he's tortured and everything, and I could play him till the cows, I could play him as a DM till the cows come home. It was just like that, and that's just one of the characters in there. That's just that everything's so you really get a sense of scene. Anyway, I'm just kind of reiterating it, but that's the plus for me.
Well, I think it's cool that certain things change throughout the adventure.
Yeah,
yeah.
What you think is what one thing, it just changes to something else.
Yeah.
For example, one of the buildings. I'm not going to say which one in case someone wants to actually run this for their group. And you're listening, but it'll look one way and it'll change to something different, and that's part of what the whole, I guess, curse is all about.
And you get to use the same floor plan,
mm-hmm.
but it becomes different things at different times.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
That's pretty nifty idea, actually.
So this module, we're not going to give out too many spoilers out there. There's many reviews on it. If someone really wants to know more about it, they can go. We can point people to Greg Nardia, probably the best place to go. He does.
Yeah,
great.
And I do want to say, I'm not saying anything about this module because Mike said I shouldn't read it. He wants to run it against me. Mm-hmm. So it's not that I have really no opinion on the module. I just haven't looked at it because I'm going to have it used on me probably in the fairly near future. So, Peter, I think that's probably a pretty ringing endorsement right there from DM Mike.
Now, that being said, I do have some cons here.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
First, at the intro, it pretty much says it's a Labyrinth Lord adventure.
Right.
But there are at least two or three locations in there where it says you need to reference the Advanced Edition Companion.
Well, then
for Labyrinth Lord.
Yeah, that's
for
first,
Labyrinth Lord.
That'd be first edition rules then.
What's that?
That's first edition rules then.
Right. Well, it's their version of first edition. But if that's going to be the case, I think it should say at the beginning, you need Labyrinth Lord and the Advanced Edition Companion. And, you know, I don't remember them all, but I know one of them was basically you're just referring to the costs chart of various meals and things and stuff for the inn. You refer to the Advanced Edition Companion. And my first thought on that was, well, it'd be easy enough just to put, you know, half a dozen little drinks and foods here and how much
make it up.
Cost. So, or yeah, just make it up. It doesn't, you don't need that list, the need to go to that rule. But anyway, that was my first con. And that's very mild. I think just something at the beginning saying, you know, it's helpful to have the Advanced Edition Companion would help.
Right.
The second, looking at some of the treasures you can find, you know, these are some really, really wealthy tavern keepers.
Yeah.
Some of the jewelry and stuff you can find, it's like, whoa, why are they running a tavern? They could buy a castle. Or something.
Mm.
And, you know, I would probably have marked everything down. You know, it's like where they say this is worth X number of gold, I'd probably go with X number of silver. But, you know, that's probably just a DM choice bit. It's a matter of flavor.
Right.
And my last one is the very ending seems rather contrived. But, you know...
Well, this is where... I'm sorry, go ahead.
But if you... You know, the way it's set up, you can skip that bit and end it just the exact... And it ends just as well, and you can resolve the whole thing.
Even if the adventurers decide to leave, it ends, you know, like...
But if,
aside from that, as far as the ending goes, that's, to me, where the potential railroading really... is kind of blatant because the characters are asked to do a certain things that I can see most players going, screw that, I'm out of here, you know, that kind of thing. And I can see some DMs who are not as nice as us or something like that actually going, okay, well, you can't get out of here, da da da, you have to do this.
Yeah. And
experienced DMs only.
Personally, if I ran this, I would skip that last very little denouement and just come up with some other way to resolve the situation.
Right.
Rather than the way they have it set up.
I can hardly wait for you to run this for Liz and her group now because I want to see how you would do this.
Oh, yeah. Maybe after I run it, Liz can get on and actually say what happened.
Yeah.
Assuming she survives.
She'll probably go in the back of the inn. Anyway,
if I die during it, I'll just give a review up to the point where I died. It's like, no, I can't tell you what happened after that. I was dead.
Okay, cool. So let's give it our usual ratings.
Okay.
Starting with Mike. Dragons.
Yeah. I've mentioned some cons, but I still believe that the pros far outweigh the cons. And I would say For normal use, I'd say a 3.5 dragons. For a Halloween or, you know, you're specifically a spooky time that you're trying to do, I'd say 4.
Okay. Liz?
Well.
From what you've heard from this conversation.
From what I have heard of this conversation, I would probably, sight unseen, Go ahead and give it a 3.5 dragon as well.
Okay.
I do remember that on Blood Moon Rising, the character development for the NPCs was fabulous, and it sounds like from what's been talked about here that there's more of the same in this one. So I'm looking forward to running into some of the PCs for End of the Lost Heroes and see what they're going to be like.
Okay. Glenn.
I'm going to go out and give it 4. I know that there's the pros and cons that I mentioned, but as far as the railroading issue, which I seem to be stressing out over, I'll just say, you know, for experienced DMs only, I wouldn't throw this at a novice, but
yeah, there are a lot of NPCs you have to play with some detail. So
in fact, he says you should read over this 3 or 4 times, just to get the not only the sequence of events, but just to get the feel of it. So you don't do that. That's why it needs somebody who's had maybe a couple campaigns under their belt or something like that. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a 4.
Okay. I'm going with a 3, only because I hate railroading. I despise that. That's why I don't like modules mostly, because a lot of times you got to railroad.
Well, I'm there too, but like Mike said, I think the good outweighs the bad, and just, you know, if you go in with that and you deal with it, you know.
I think his other module was a lot better than this module, to be honest.
Yeah, that was more of a sandbox, whereas this is very location and specific.
Yeah,
it's probably, it's much more story than Blood Moon Rising was.
That's probably why I liked it more.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right, so we've rated it pretty much 3.5. It gets total. We'll call it that.
Okay.
3.5, and if you want to pick it up, you can get it on DriveThruRPG. Probably get it through a link on Dragon's Foot as well, I believe. I've seen it.
Yeah.
It goes for $4.95. You can buy a pretty good download. Definitely go pick it up. I'll try to find a link and put it in the show notes if I can grab it. Otherwise, you just do a quick search for it, and it comes up right away in DriveThruRPG.
What was that again? Small Niche Games?
Small Niche Games.
I think probably find it on their website, too.
Yeah, I think it's smallnichegames.com or something, but I know it's on DriveThruRPG because I was just looking at the Greg Nardi blog, and he mentions it's through there. So pick it up. Tell us what you think. Say, give us an email or phone us in. Email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com. Phone number 570-290-SAVE. And that's going to conclude our show this week as we're going to walk down that highway, thumbs out, cars blowing by us, no one picking us up, and us being sad.
Aww.
Oh, I was the one in the convertible going by.
Glenn.
Ah.
So we're going to say, run while you can, save or die, something or other. We love you. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Briarg.
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com. Or visit Save or Die at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / Save or Die Podcast. Or follow them on Twitter at The Evil DM.